Our next speaker is Commissioner Beth Berlin of the Albany County Department of Social Services. Commissioner Berlin.
Good morning. For today's discussion, I've organized my comments into three areas: a review of the data in order to speak to some of the direct as well as indirect impacts of welfare reform in Albany County, an overview of two prominent populations who now comprise the TANF and safety net caseload, and initiatives that need to be considered in order to build upon the successes to date. Since welfare reform began 10 years ago, we have a great deal to be proud of. However, the data shows us that many of those who left welfare after reforms remain in precarious economic situations, keeping them at risk of returning to welfare. Further, as a result of welfare reform, the populations that now comprise TANF and safety net caseloads have changed significantly. Together, these factors tell us that we need to reorganize our efforts and amend our approaches in order to continue our success in moving individuals away from social services to self-sufficiency. Albany County, like the rest of New York State, has experienced tremendous success in reducing our TANF caseload over the past 10 years. However, to get a more accurate gauge of our success as well as how well former TANF families are doing on their own, it is important to not only look at the data that reflects TANF, but several other publicly funded programs such as Safety Net, Medicaid, food stamps, and emergency services. Over the past 10 years in Albany County, the TANF caseload has decreased by 65%, but the safety net caseload is up, and that is primarily a result of the families who have exceeded the five-year federal limit. Reliance on programs to support low-income families has increased dramatically over the past 10 years. Medicaid caseload is up 68%, food stamps is up nearly 20%, applications for emergency aid to families has increased 450%, applications for emergency aid to adults has increased over 130%. We have also increased spending on supportive services such as child care and transportation. So while we have been successful in moving individuals off of the traditional welfare programs, the data indicates that there is a growing reliance on other public programs, suggesting that working individuals and families are not able to earn enough to be fully self-sufficient. Additionally, the dramatic increase in emergency benefits indicates that many individuals who have left our roles are in very volatile economic situation and are only a crisis away from returning to welfare. There are two prominent populations emerging among the TANF and safety net caseloads: child-only cases and families with multiple barriers. I would first like to speak to the child-only cases. Because of the success of welfare reform, we have seen a significant growth in the proportion of TANF cases that are child-only. In Albany County, although the total number of child-only cases has not changed significantly, they now make up over a third of our TANF caseload. We have over 500 child-only cases, which provide assistance to over 900 children. Child-only cases can be generally divided into three distinct types of living arrangements: non-parent caregivers, relatives raising children whose parents are no longer able to care for them, parents receiving supplemental security income, parents who are disabled and therefore not eligible to receive TANF, but whose children are eligible, some of whom, prior to receiving SSI, were in receipt of TANF; immigrant parents, families in which the parent is an immigrant who is not eligible for TANF, but the children are U.S. citizens and are eligible. The child-only caseload presents a unique set of challenges for the temporary assistance system. Because there is no adult head of household included in the grant, these cases fall outside the workforce philosophy and program requirements. A 2004 New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance study administered by Cornell University found that among child-only cases, 58% of caretakers articulated a need for some other service, with most common response being money or help with expenses, educational services or vocational training for the child, and or child care. 81% of SSI head of households and 45% of non-parent caretakers indicated having one or more food-related problems in the past year. 52% of SSI household symptoms suggest poor mental health. 22% of children aged 12 to 17 had been suspended or expelled from school in the past year. And the 16 and 17-year-olds described strikingly conventional hopes and dreams. However, many youth were in precarious positions where ordinary dreams would be likely to remain fantasies. We need to be mindful and responsive to what the data is telling us about the children who are part of the child-only cases. Otherwise, we will miss the opportunity to help these youngsters and increase the likelihood that we will serve a significant percent of these children when they become adults. I'll speak a bit more of my thoughts in that area in a moment. The other predominant TANF and safety net population we are now serving are families with multiple barriers. There is no better way for me to articulate the complexities and challenges being faced than to provide you a glimpse into one of the lives of our families. I'm going to call her Samantha. Samantha is a single mother with three children. She is HIV positive and suffers from mental health issues in addition to the physical symptoms of her disease. She's being treated by a mental health counselor and medical doctor, respectively, for psychological and as a result of the psychological and physical conditions she has. Samantha is also involved in substance abuse outpatient counseling. She is struggling to keep her house as a result of a rent increase from $500 to $700 a month. Her oldest child, a daughter, is 14 years old and exhibiting anger and behavior issues, including directing verbal and physical anger at Samantha. She ignores Samantha's 9 o'clock curfew by returning home late at night. She is also getting into fights at school, has been suspended, is currently on probation, and has become sexually active. One more thing you should know about Samantha. She works. She has held a part-time clerical job for over a year. Samantha and her family are involved in 6 systems: social services, family court, probation, mental health, education, and child welfare. And of course, she also has her responsibilities to her employer, landlord, and 2 other children. Despite the struggles, Samantha's family has its strengths. Samantha is a mom who works, loves her children, and puts in place appropriate parental expectations as seen by setting a curfew. However, the challenges of being a single mother on top of living with mental health and physical health issues and other barriers can be overwhelming for Samantha, as it would be for many of us here. While there are characteristics of Samantha's situation that are unique to her, unfortunately, there are many more that are common among the families we serve. Like Samantha, other families we serve commonly live with a host of physical health issues, whether it's HIV, diabetes, or other limiting physical ailments, a mental health illness and/or personality disorder, and substance abuse issues. Many of the families we serve live in unstable housing environments and have children who are struggling in school. In looking at the data and reviewing the populations we now serve, in addition to supporting many of the statements made by other panelists and conversations from the earlier panelists, there are a few ideas I would like to share that I think would help us in our effort to move forward. Incorporate a work-first philosophy across all of the health and human services systems. Prepare and provide children with the skills they need to advance in life. Invest in services that support low-income working families. With the recognition that most of the families we serve have multiple issues demanding their time and attention, we need to move forward on all fronts to incorporate and support a work-first philosophy. This requires communication, common goals, and consistent implementation across state agencies. Priorities need to be aligned, and I would argue all systems should have a component that represents the importance of work. Some specific examples. A large percentage of our single population and a smaller percentage of our family population struggle to overcome addiction. Many are in and out of treatment. I would like to suggest that there be consistent efforts and implementation designed at incorporating work preparation and work linkages as a component of substance abuse treatment. Another example of where collaborative efforts and aligned priorities could be helpful is with the Office of Court Administration as it relates to the types of services courts remand families and individuals to participate in. This is particularly important given the recent federal regulatory changes, which will impact our participation rates, with one of the most dramatic resulting from the activities allowable under community service. If we were able to agree that work is a critical component to establishing family stability and preservation, then we might see court-ordered services that work hand-in-hand with DSS employment activities. A second area that provides a great deal of opportunity is to establish interventions which would prepare and provide children with the skills they need to advance in life. As I stated earlier, over a third of our caseload consists of the child-only cases in which the head of household is not on welfare, and therefore local districts have little engagement with these families. In the TANF and safety net families, we see many children like Samantha's oldest at risk of not graduating from high school. It is important for us to ensure that children are exposed. 1 minute. are exposed and engaged to the educational activities. We need to find interventions that support and engage these children so that they can achieve educational success and establish career goals and avoid transitioning on welfare as an adult. Efforts can be made across the spectrum of services provided through engagement. Child care subsidies should be linked to child care that offers age-appropriate stimulation and education. In Albany County, we anticipate spending close to $10 million in child care this year. It is fair to expect that those dollars support a safe, healthy, and stimulating environment. I do not mean that we take away parent choice, nor do I seek to dissolve the economic benefits of the legally exempt caregivers. There have been initiatives supported by grants that produce outcomes I'm talking about. However, grants are time-limited, and resources to support the continuation of such initiatives are difficult to come by. We also need to focus on youth ages 14 to 17. They are at a pivotal point in their lives, and the decision to graduate high school is one that has a lifelong impact, a perfect opportunity for a coordinated multi-system approach. If we brought together the educational, social service, labor, probation, workforce investment systems to discuss a comprehensive approach to engaging youth and offering the array of career opportunities with a mechanism to link those opportunities, we could divert individuals from ever coming into social services department. The data speaks to the fact that many individuals who used to receive temporary assistance are still relying on publicly funded programs. Efforts need to be made to ensure that we support their success in moving into employment. We want to continue to make sure that working is financially more appealing than welfare. This can be accomplished through continuing programs which assist low-income families, such as the Earned Income Tax Credit. It should also be accomplished through initiatives implemented in collaboration with employers and business people that foster the advancement of the employed population. Resources should support entry-level workers while employed prepare for advancement. This can be accomplished through training initiatives that provide skills enhancement for workers. By providing such opportunities to an entry-level workforce, we are supporting their ability to move up within an organization or gain marketable skills leading to a better job. Ideally, through this encouragement of career advancement and higher wages, entry-level positions will be more routinely available for the unemployed or underemployed. Once they have their foot in the door, we then provide them with a skills upgrade training. We have a great deal to be proud of as we look over the past 10 years. We also need to recognize the population we now serve is different than it was 10 years ago. By reorganizing ourselves to address the different dynamics, we can continue to successfully move individuals away from a reliance on welfare services. Thank you.